You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is my dark legacy. Here we go.
Let's go.
Hi. This is For the Girls Podcast.
I'm Jason Black.
And I'm Nick Westrate. This is a podcast about fandom from the queer community to the iconic female performance community.
Yeah, we're celebrating the women that have inspired us to live our best lives.
We grew up together, and we were always obsessed with something that cliched or called divas. And so this is the Diva Podcast. This is the Queer Diva Podcast. We have different guests on to discuss, people like Bette Midler and Barbara Streisand and Aretha Franklin and Tina Turner. And then sometimes we just talk just to each other, like today.
Yes, and we don't just do the musical divas. We do the screen divas. We do TV divas. Oh, we might be doing a book diva coming up here soon.
Book divas. We have
we've
touched on cooking divas. We've done a light pseudo Rachel Ray episode.
Oh yeah, and more Rachel Ray episodes coming on. I mean, I can't believe I don't think I've ever even mentioned Martha. Who is like?
I can't believe you've never mentioned Martha. I actually was, I get Martha's daily email newsletter, and she was showing me like fall fantasy tables today.
I don't know if people know this. How the fuck would you know this? I have a magazine council vintage in my bathroom, and it's just backlog of Martha Stewart Living. So if you're like, if you want to be like, oh, I wonder if there's some fun, and then you just keep creeping through, and it's just Martha Living. So, date me,
Hi, Jay. Hi. We haven't potted in a couple weeks. Podcast-y. Hi, how are you?
I know, we haven't potted since Judy.
Oh, I'd have to go back.
Did y'all see Judy?
I have to go back. I feel like everyone went and saw Judy and was pretty excited to talk to us about this. Thank you, all you Battle Angels, for writing us all those amazing emails and leaving us those reviews. Keep doing it. It's amazing. We love them. But lots of people wrote and like loved listening to Judy, and I think it kicked off Halloween month right. What else has been going on with you?
Not too much. I am getting into the holiday spirit. I'm decorating. Obviously, iconically decorating for the holidays.
It's your number one holiday, Halloween.
It is. Last year, I got a tattoo of a jack-o'-lantern on my ankle, because what do you do when you're 33? ever since then, I've been really... I talked about this. I've also sprinkled this in about my love for decorations, but I'm really into 80s, 90s. Nostalgia decorations, and I've really leaned into that for this Halloween season. So maybe I'll take a photo of that and share that, because I built a whole shrine that is disturbing. The theme of my room is little girl's bedroom right before an exorcism.
It's exactly what it looks like.
Yes. Yes, it does. Thank you. So yes, that's what I've been doing. What have you been doing, babe?
Nothing. I've been sick.
You're a little sicky.
I'm really sick. Yeah, so everyone pardon my sick soundingness. I had jury duty this week. My jury duty was run by a really iconic diva named Irene, who has worked in the criminal justice system for 30 years. I only had to be there one day. Oh, the best part of jury duty, though, is we're all sitting there and we're listening intently as she's because they call off the names of who has to go into, the jury room for selection or whatever. And Irene goes, Jennifer Lopez. And the entire jury room stands up and starts looking around. And the lady who was a different Jennifer Lopez, obviously, was like, no, thank you, everyone. She was like, gets it all the time.
Oh, man, I was hoping Irene was going to pull a classic Halloween trick on you all, because that would have been so funny. And she was like, I fooled you. Do they give you do they give you coffee and cookies?
No. There's a guy like set up outside who like sells coffee and snacks and stuff, but you have to buy them. Mm. But they do have loads of great jokes, loads of really good sarcasm, and I got out in one day. It was pretty great. And I basically just like sat around and edited the podcast. Like there was an outlet and I just plugged in and went to work on next week's episode.
It was kind of like you're in the airport or something.
It's like waiting at the airport. It was totally fine. But I think that's where I got my cold, because I was like in this room with a million strangers.
Did you feel rejected because you didn't get picked?
No, I felt so happy because I have been picked before and I've served on a jury before, and it's very time consuming. And so I'm glad I didn't get picked. I don't feel rejected, though there is a little bit of that, like not being called on, but I'm cool with it. I'm happy about it.
It stresses me out. I have jury duty drama that I have to figure out.
You should just go. I know. Just go. Just don't resist it.
I'm not trying to resist it. I didn't get the initial invite. Rude. I just got that I didn't come to my invite thing. And then I went online and then they were like, you're shut out of this. You can't see anything. And then I just kind of stopped investigating it because I'm too busy decorating. But then I also heard that if you actually don't investigate it, they can arrest you. So
they can.
I don't want to get arrested.
I mean, I doubt they will, but
if they pull me over and be like, I have a podcast. I'm decorating for Halloween still. My roommate actually
always gets you out of tickets.
Hates my decorations, so I keep like just subtly moving things around so that like kind of confuses him, but did you decorate? What are you doing for fall?
No, we don't decorate. We decorate for Christmas. That's it. I haven't even gotten any decorative gourds yet. Oh, I need to get some gourds. Get some decorative gourds. I get that stuff for like Thanksgiving. We don't do a lot of October decoration in this house.
Bitch, you get the gourds for Halloween, and then you subtly transition that into the Thanksgiving.
They get moldy by Thanksgiving.
No, that's the whole magic.
We have been watching spooky movies, though, which has been good. I told you I just saw Parasite, which is amazing. Not really for the girls, though.
Is it spooky?
It is spooky. It's spooky, spooky for Halloween. It's great for Halloween. It's perfect. But the thing that fucking depressed the fuck out of me this week, though,
I know,
is that Ronan Farrow book.
Did you get it?
No, but I read the really good, there's a really good article by Rebecca Traister in New York Magazine about it, and I read that, and it makes me think of my number one girl, Anne Curry, speaking of being for the girls, and I just hope that justice. Anne Curry is, just justice for fucking Anne Curry is all I have to say, because Rebecca Traister's great. You guys find this article, it's really good, it's all about the kind of systemic corruption at NBC that kept this going, mm-hmm. and how like when there were sexual harassment allegations against Tom Brokaw, like all the women were forced to sign a letter basically saying that they love Tom Brokaw, even though none of the women wanted to do that, but just like the bosses at NBC told them to. Just like creepy shit. It's a lot more like entrenched and creepy than that, but read the article, Rebecca Traister, New York Magazine, she's great. But yeah, anyway, that really kind of like bummed me out, but I'm happy that Anne Curry is no longer at Today, but I love her so much.
I read.
And I worry about Hoda. I just worry about Hoda.
Hoda's strong. Hoda's invincible. Don't worry about Hoda. Although they are exhausting Hoda's resources. Like she's on every single hour of the Today now. So it's like,
yeah, I know it's, like, give her, let her be on that Matt Lauer schedule where she gets to be on for an hour and a half.
Speaking of Halloween, that's one of my favorite traditions, is seeing the fucked up shit they do for her costume day in the studio. If you all just need like a break from this cruel, cruel world, yes, there's going to be pictures of Matt Lauer, but he looks a whole bunch of a mess in all of them. Go to like the group costumes of like throughout the like years of the Today Show. And especially if you don't have that much time in your very busy schedules, look at when they all dress up as the Peanuts, because it is some of the most nightmare-inducing.
It's so gross. It's so gross.
Like, unbelievable, what the fuckery. Kathy Lee is just, oh gosh, Kathy Lee Hoda. Take me back to the good old days where, like,
we're gonna, yeah, we need to do an entire Today Show episode.
We absolutely will. Yeah, it's actually, that's fun. A Today Show episode, you know, of the women was something that Nick and I have been talking about since we started this podcast. So
that's true. Get ready for that. It's gonna come to you one of these days.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Oh, okay, Battle Angels. So listen, y'all, I think we talked about this when we had to do our emergency Judy podcast that we were going to start with the whole month of Halloween. But, you know, we can't predict these things. We don't know when there's going to be the 40-minute director cut of Diane and that we have to tape about. Or when Palms is going to get a sequel, which, if you've seen Palms, would be very hard to do. Cheerleading in Heaven, maybe?
We had no idea. We had no idea. I actually would love that.
So these things come, and we just have to answer the call. Or
we do.
Or our three fans would kill us.
There was no way for us to know that Judy was going to be released at a certain date. There was no way for us to know. That information is not readily available at all.
They dropped that on us like a bomb.
It was like Beyonce's, an Adele track.
It was like Beyonce's album. They were like, let's secretly at midnight drop the Judy movie on all of them and just watch them scurry to the theaters.
That's exactly what happened. So we had to change up our schedule, but we still... So last week we brought you Spooky, Spooky Susie Sue. If you are thinking, I don't know who Susie Sue is, I'm not going to let... Just listen, she's fucking spooky goddess who did the theme from Batman Returns, one of the great Halloween / Christmas movies of all time.
She's gothy. She's not just for Halloween, she's for all year long, but like, we just absolutely love her.
But I was going to tell you this, because you know how we were talking about Hot Girl Summer before? Mm-hmm. Now you know what we're in now, according to the internet. Sad Girl Fall.
Oh, I love that.
So she's perfect for your Sad Girl Fall.
And Brandon was such a delight. If you haven't listened to the episode, go back. That's technically our beginning of our Spooky Spoos. Actually, who do we have after this episode?
After this episode, Brandon's partner, husband, Spindle, is coming on to talk about another spooky diva, but you just have to wait and see who that is. Yeah. But think of who the other spooky, fun divas are.
It was our first couples diva taping that we've ever done. It was really exciting.
Yeah, it was really fun. And they're really cool and amazing artists and super creative and super goth and beautiful.
So this is what we were originally going to do before Judy surprised all of us with its release date. This was going to be our first spooky episode that we're doing right now. And Nick and I, talk about moms, aunties, any person alive that's ever heard of a podcast listens to, obviously, My Favorite Murder with Karen in Georgia, iconic.
Yes.
It's like
a huge inspiration to us of how we started this podcast. We love My Favorite Murder so much.
Yeah, and who doesn't? So we are kind of going to do a fun, slight riff on this, in which I'm titling My Favorite Murder, She Wrote.
Yes,
girl! I saved that from Nick. I thought it was so smart and funny. I was like, I've got a name for this, but I'm not telling you.
My Favorite Murder, She Wrote. That was my Karen Kilgariff impersonation.
And maybe, I don't know, I think, Nick, like, I thought, like, it'd be actually really fun that you and I bring each other episodes of My Favorite Murder, She Wrote, and, like, read it like a real murder. Because we want to do this as a series. I'm sure, like, we have, like, you know, we were trying to do... bring back some recurring bits here, y'all. And I think my favorite Murder, She Wrote, if this is a success, is going to possibly be one of them. And I think it would be fun if we, like, bring each other murders. But this episode, we're just tackling one of iconic Murder, She Wrote episodes called Fire Burn and Cauldron Bubble.
That's right. It's a witchy Murder, She Wrote episode for Halloween for all of you spookies. So if murder wasn't enough for you for this Halloween, this is Jessica Fletcher also tackling witchcraft as well as murder.
So I'm going to do the first half, and then Nick is going to do the second half. But girl, can you like give us some intro on Murder, She Wrote?
Yeah, for everyone who doesn't know what Murder, She Wrote is.
Yeah.
Murder, She Wrote is an iconic television show that ran for 12 years on CBS from 1984 to 1996, starring Dame Angela Lansbury, one of the grand gay diva supremes of all time. It was on Sunday nights at 8. I know that I remember that deeply because it was on after 60 Minutes, and my dad would force us to watch 60 Minutes as a family, and then he would leave the room, and my mom would watch Murder, She Wrote with us.
That's where I got a lot of my Murder, She Wrote memories, is from being at your house and like staying in that living room.
My mom was a Murder, She Wrote fanatic.
It has this weird quality of like watching, it's like a warm blanket of death. It's like a warm grandma's quilted blanket of death watching it. Like, I cannot tell y'all how soothing it is to spend an hour watching it, right? Like, there's something so fucking comforting about
It's like Grandma Law and Order.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Actually, there's I started up on my Murder, She Wrote binge again last year because there's, get this, a show called Hallmark Mysteries. It's like a channel. Movies and Mysteries. Hallmark Movies and Mysteries. Oh, that's where Aunt Becky was like bankrolling her career on.
That's where she was bankrolling her daughter's college career.
Right. Her daughter's lying career. And so they would do like marathons every night. And this was in like February, and like talk about sad girl like deep winter in California. But I was still a sad girl. I still am a sad girl. And I would just, like, put that on. And it would be like, Sarah, it would just be like, I don't know, Valium would just come over me. And I would just, like, put that Murder, She Wrote on and just, I don't know, it was just so relaxing.
It's like a nice TV Valium. It's kind of exciting, but it's not scary. And also, like, Angela, when they made the show, it started because she had done a couple, like, BBC series as Mrs. Marple, who's a famous, like, English detective. And they kind of adapted that for her. They were trying to maybe do an American Mrs. Marple, which then turned into Murder, She Wrote. And Angela really hated violence. So that's why there's very little violence on the show, and she always tried to avoid it. She also, just a little background on the show, she always wanted to keep J.B. Fletcher a single woman. Because CBS was always trying to get her to have a love interest, and she really rejected that. And as it became kind of this ratings juggernaut, she got creative control, and she started becoming a producer, and her production company got involved, and she had creative control of Jessica's clothes. She had creative control of things like whether or not she would have a love interest, which she never wanted. And then as the years went on, sadly, CBS tried to move it to Thursday to compete with Friends, which was the stupidest move ever, and it ended after 12 seasons. And there's even an iconic episode where Angela explores J.B. Fletcher has to solve a murder on the set of a TV show called Buds, which is like the parody of Friends. So she tried to like throw some shade on Friends.
That's amazing.
And then Angela tried to turn it into a musical. But then that didn't really work out. But it morphed, that musical she tried to make out of Murder, She Wrote turned into the iconic Mrs. Claus, her great musical about Santa Claus's wife.
Oh, I didn't know that. She also went on, after the show got canceled, she went on and did, I think, 3 movies. Like,
yeah. And TV movies.
They were all set, like, I think one was set in Ireland, and so they weren't actually set in her iconic hometown that we'll talk about soon. And she never actually, besides the first episode, she never had a love interest. So she like prevailed on that. She was always
yeah.
And she was, and the other, it was, a lot of it was like, it's very subtly revolutionary because she was actually a happily single woman. You know, like, mm-hmm. she, and she didn't have any children, and there was never a point in that show where she, like, bemoans that. She was very content with her life, being an authoress.
Yeah, she was, like, content in herself. She has such self-contentment, self-actualization.
Sorry, y'all. If you all are hearing, like, some bang, bang, bangs, they are fully tearing off the roof of my apartment right now. But, like, if there's a lot of bang, bang, bangs, just, I don't know, make it spooky for you. Make it seem like I'm taping in a haunted goddamn house. But they're really just roofing. There's just roofers. Battle angels, battle with us. We got a lot of our information for this episode. I did. I got, actually, I don't know what your sources were. I know that we shared some. But a lot of mine came from The Telegraph, an article in The Telegraph. And, like, one of our most help... Oh, I got something from called Hooked on Houses.
Amazing.
Yes, thank you. And I think our probably, like... I think what we're going to use a lot for our favorite Murder, She Wrote series, because, like, it's so amazing, is this website called Murder, She Blogged. This person writes about every single episode. She has... I don't know if you've seen this, Nick. You can go. There's a section of all of the books J.B. Fletcher has ever written, and like any shot of the yes, anytime it's mentioned, it's written down, and any shot of like the book that they can get a hold. It's iconic. It's like really iconic. Like if you're into
this, is a fandom I love so much. Murder She Blogged. I mean, yes. The Murder She Wrote fans are so intense. We also love an Instagram you should follow called Murder She Wore.
Yep.
Where they put up Jessica Fletcher next to pieces of dessert, and that she looks like. It's very beautiful.
It is really intense. I think, you know, everyone talks about, oh, they're like a fan of the Golden Girls and this and that. But like, you go onto your Etsy and type in Murder, She Wrote, and there is a ton of like ephemera, memorabilia. You can every year get a J.B. Fletcher calendar, hunting.
Oh, yeah, yes, I know what everyone in my family is getting.
J.B. Fletcher God. I'm wearing my J.B. Fletcher sweater, God. So I think it's like, yeah, there is a huge fan base for Murder, She Wrote. And I think, oh, also we're burying the lead. You all can watch if you are have Amazon Prime. There's what, seasons 1 through 5?
Yeah, seasons right? 1 through 5 are on Amazon Prime. This is season 5, episode something. Mm-hmm. It's called Fire Burn, Cauldron Bubble.
Yes. Fire Burn, Cauldron Bubble. Okay, let's break this down for y'all a little bit. I want to talk about where this is set, which is called Cobbett Cove. This is kind of where Jessica Fletcher lives, even though like she does other murders. She in a couple of seasons iconically loved to travel to New York to teach. But this is where J.B. Fletcher lives. This is Cobbett Cove in Maine. Okay, that's not real. And in Murder, She Blogged, this is. I just took this wholesale. This is what she says. In this series, Cobbett Cove's exact location on the Maine coast was never fixed and intended to shift around according to the writer's whims, kind of like a modern-day Brigadoon. Which, Brigadoon the musical is bananas. Bring that back with, like, a real, like, post-punk kind of thing. Talk about that. That show is... I looked Brigadoon up and I was like, well, I forgot how crazy that shit is. The name of other Maine towns, some real, some made up, get tossed around with abandoned. Although hints are sprinkled throughout the episodes set in Maine, a mention of how long it takes to drive to Portland, for instance, or the mileage between it and New York City, they seldom agree. Two episodes even briefly show signposts grouping Cobbett Cove with the names of several other real towns in Maine. But the signposts contradict each other. It should be remembered that these details were generated by people living in California, not Maine. And so such... I know, isn't this crazy? So such, they can't reasonably be used as a map. The exact location of Cobbett Cove is, in the final analysis, a little continuity flaw that is best overlooked. So that's how crazy this blog is, you all. Because Cobbett Cove is... So they did not shoot on the East Coast at all or in Maine. Where did they shoot?
No.
Where did they shoot, bitch? In Mendocino.
In Mendocino. Talk to me of Mendocino.
That was my next line that I wrote, girl. Talk to me of Mendocino. Which is kind of cool. But they said, like, because of all of the kind of activity there, they barred in around like $2 million in revenues to Mendocino.
Oh, cute. You're welcome, Mendocino.
Yeah.
Don't ever say we never gave you anything.
Okay, so here's some facts about Cabo Cove. Cabo Cove is a population of 3,560, and that's like my little village, girl, where I'm from.
That's like Michigan. Edwardsburg.
Oh, shh! You gotta cut, you beep that. You can't say that. I don't want y'all to know where I'm famous. My parents. Everyone's all the
I don't want everyone mobbing. I don't want everyone mobbing your house.
My parents. They're overwhelmed by my fans.
Okay, wait. So, how many people is it?
3,560. Very tiny. But even with that lowest population rate, technically, if this was real, they hold the highest murder per head per capita.
Of course, absolutely.
Because of
how many people have died?
I don't actually have the number of how many people died, but I know that it's 60% higher murder rate than what do you think is the actual murder capita in the world?
Of America, it was Gary for a while.
Oh, really?
Wasn't it?
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, I think so. Back in the 80s or something. Or at least that's what we were always told, that Gary had a lot of crime. What is it?
Honduras.
Oh, Honduras, of course. Yeah, that makes sense. But Cabot Cove is more than Honduras, right?
Cabot Cove. Angela Lansbury brings death. Imagine all the gossiping. I wrote this like really random thing about how I love all the idea of all the gossip that goes on in Cabot Cove with like all the death, and how like being in my tiny little village, my best friend Lauren and I would just like die for just like a little bit of scandal. So this would just be like living in Cabot Cove. And then I had like another fantasy that like, I think that when you die, girl, we're going way off the mark here. I think that when you die, you just kind of like end up in your dreams. And in my dreams of Cabot Cove, like in my next life, I play the clown of Cabot Cove. And so like Jessica Fletcher's like, who's that at my window? And then it's like, she pulls open the curtains and she's like, oh, it's just Jason the clown. Shoo, Jason the clown. And then it's like, run around the town. And like, eat all the casserole. I know, that's crazy. But that's...
Eat all the casserole. You're going to get killed so quickly. Jason the clown. The death of Jason the clown happens like season one, episode four.
Yeah, but then I come back as like, I don't know, Jason the movie theater operator. And actually they do it really is like Law and Order, because a lot of these people who play like small roles come back as other characters. And so, yeah, so Cabot Cove has Angela Lansbury, and like we said, she's a single lady, and then she actually has a couple of friends that help her, which is mainly like the sheriff. There's two different sheriffs throughout the series.
Right.
And then there's Dr. Seth, who plays a big role.
He's a big part of this episode of Fire, Burn, Cauldron, Bubble.
Yeah, and he's in a lot of the, he's in I think like 68 episodes or something. He's in a lot of the episodes. He's like one of Jessica's best, she has a lot of friends. That's what she has. It's like,
she's nothing but friends.
She's nothing but friends.
Damn, everyone is friends with Jessica Fletcher.
Oh God, wouldn't you? Yes, including Jason the Clown. It just bounces like, gosh, I just want to, don't you want to live there? Don't you want to live in Cabot Cove?
I definitely want to live in Cabot Cove. I want to,
It's just like the,
I want to work at the,
where you want to work, girl?
I want to work at the library with Dee Wallace.
I can't wait to talk about that library, mama. It's just something about, I mean, obviously, like, all of us just live in such nostalgia, but that all that looks, all the sweaters, all of the, everything, it's just, okay. Are y'all ready for Fire, Burn, Cauldron, Bubble? This is from season 5, episode 13.
Spooky, episode 13.
Dun, 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 dun. Did you, this is, okay. I'm real dark right now. I'm a real dark, sad girl. But don't you love the opening music? Dun, 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 dun.
It's so beautiful.
How hot would that be if at my funeral, that music comes on and someone on a bicycle reels my coffin out. Dun, 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 dun.
I'm writing it down right now. I'll make sure that happens for you.
Yeah, put that in my will.
I'm in charge of that. We actually are iconically really in charge of each other's funerals in a very serious way.
I can really see you being really getting really frenetic about how to actually get the coffin on the bike. To get, like, how to properly, like, bike it out without me constant. I think me falling off, though, would be a fun scene. dun, 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 dun. He's dead. Okay, so this is... Okay, so let's get focused. Here we go. Okay, so this is our opening for our spooky, spooky episode. And it does kind of open on an eerie, dark night, where there's a pilgrim doing some really witchy stuff, like lighting candles and saying a spell to Beelzebub.
Oh, hear me, great Beelzebub and Neboros and Flurity. Thus do I call for it to rain both pestilence and pain unto all the generations of the men and women who killed me.
She's drawing a pentagram.
Yeah, she's drawing a pentagram in the sand.
And who finds her there?
Dr. Seth. Dr. Seth gets called to Agnes Finney's house, because, like, something, Agnes broke something, so he's called to her house, and he, like, sees the pilgrim and, like, interrupts her, and she runs away, and so then Dr. Thess is like, OMG, and then he runs where, obviously, to J.B. Fletcher's house, and freaks out. But what is J.B. doing? She's with her friend, so many friends, Harriet, and what are they planning for, bitch? I could die. The Garden Club Casserole Lunch.
Laura Prouty's tuna noodle bake, and your seafood rice dish, and Mildred's pigs in blankets. Oh, Jessica, tell me there'll be enough for the Garden Club's casserole supper.
Yes,
that's right. Yes, they're planning what they're making for the Garden Club Casserole Lunch.
Do you hear that click? Yes, Mama, that's what Jason the Clown would be doing. Give me that. I just want that. That's what I want my food to be. Like... Steelback.
I just want to be invited to the casserole lunch. That woman Harriet is really hectic, though.
Yeah, well, yeah, she is, yeah. And so, like, so Seth runs and he's like, oh my gosh, I saw a witchy poo. And Harriet was like, oh no, I know exactly who that is. That is Patience Tarhoon. She was a witch 300 years ago and she was killed for being a witch. And she's back. And Harriet's like, I gotta go tell the Garden Club. They're going to freak, out.
Yes, freak. Absolutely. And where was she? Where did they see Patience Tahoon?
Outside of Agnes's house.
Yes, but at the fucking witch's stump. There's a special witch's stump in Cabot Cove. Absolutely.
We're down at the stump. And okay, so.
I'm going to meet you down at the witch's stump.
Oh, y'all want to meet at the witch's stump real quick?
Just meet me over there, draw a pentagram. Happy Halloween.
So as we said, it's a big deal because 300 years ago, we're on the anniversary of when she was killed at that stump, which I'm guessing was a tree. I'm guessing it was like probably, she probably didn't get killed by a stump. I think she maybe got. So the next day, Jess runs into Sheriff Metzger, who is like all up in a frenzy because the Paps have gotten hold. That Patience is back.
And the Paps are nuts.
The Paps are nuts. They're freaking out. And the sheriff, I love this. The sheriff shows Jess some of the stuff found on the scene, and then Jess, some of the memorabilia, and then the candles, and Jess goes, oh.
This candle appears to be crudely made.
Yes, bitch.
She can spot a crudely made. I also love that in Cabot Cove, the first thing the police do is show the box of evidence to Jessica Fletcher.
And right after she said that, I literally wrote in my notes, yes, bitch, you're my queen. You know what a crudely made candle is. Then Jess has some stuff to do. What did she have to do? She has to drop some books off at the Cabot Cove Library, which Nick and I love, girl.
I'm going to work there. I'm going to work there with who?
D. Wallace. Y'all, I just went to the library, and I just got myself a book, like, for the first time in 5 years.
What'd you get?
A sci-fi book, a classic sci-fi book by Ursula K. Le Guin. I can't say.
Oh, cool!
Called The Left Hand of Darkness. So it's like a very queer. Yes. It's kind of like a seminal queer Sci-fi book. Anyways, yes. I just love that library. I love the way the library looks. I love when how those old libraries smell, too. Like,
the smell is really what it is for me.
It's what it is, right? Like, just kind of...
It gives me everything.
I love libraries, yeah.
So Dee Wallace is the librarian, and who is she related to?
Well, let me tell you this, y'all. Dee Wallace is the OG Scream Queen. If you don't know who Dee Wallace is, she was the mom in E.T., best part in E.T., if I have to say so myself. She was the mom in Cujo. Actually, girl, get on this tea. Y'all, Dee Wallace makes like 5 horror movies a year.
She still does.
She still does. Like, if you want to do the IMDb, you're going to get real spooked out. There is one that I like kind of fast forwarding.
Turn on all your lights before you go onto her IMDb page because you're going to get scared.
Scared. It's scary, these titles. There's one that's on Amazon Prime called, it's like an update of Hansel and Gretel from I think 2013, in which she just like fattens people up and bakes them alive.
Yes, Dee Wallace. Dee Wallace.
Well, guess who she's related to, y'all? Oh, so Dee Wallace plays Mildred. Duh. Mm-hmm,
that's right. Duh, obviously. That's who is related to... Patience, that's right. Patience Tahoon.
Frickin' Tahoon.
The witch, y'all, who is back from the dead.
And, like, she's also frazzled because everyone's calling her...
Public Library, Mildred Tahoon speaking.
And, like, she's, like, just worried because, like...
The paps are on her case.
Yeah, the paps are on her case, and she's, like, really, like... She's just like, oh my gosh, like, Adam's still trying to paint this house that, like, I inherited, but Adam's her fiancé, and she's like, oh, but, you know, maybe I could go away because I got some inheritance from that little apple farm that my uncle gave me.
And thanks to my late Uncle Curtis, the few dollars I'll receive from that little apple farm he left me, pay for a nice honeymoon.
I'm like, right. You can't write this shit. I mean, you can't because it's in this episode, but like,
absolutely.
So her and Jess are just having a good old kiki, and
oh, sorry. Did you guys think we'd leave anything out? We won't.
No, we have. and then in terms of the library. But who? Gordon Fairchild and Rick Rivers. Now, Gordon Fairchild is played by the legendary, like, very fey Robbie McDowell, who, like, you might remember him from, oh, my God, he was in Overboard, which was also shot in Mendocino. And he was Fright Night. And he was in one of your favorites that we have to do with another Miss Angela Lansbury, Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Bedknobs and Broomsticks, the ultimate witchy fantasy of England.
I'm pretty sure he was on the down low, but yeah, he was a flamer.
He's real gay in this, and his assistant is played by Jason's favorite comedian.
Yeah, by my all-time Mr. Yucks himself, Bill Maher. Such good takes. If anyone wants to really see what, like, the face of the nation... Actually, he is basically the face of the fucking nation. What did I write in my notes? I wrote, this is literally word for word. And Rick Rivers is played by Bill Maher, who legit could go fuck himself to death. He looks way young here, but still stupid and smug. Hate that son of a bitch. that's in my classic write-up of this episode.
He also has he has a mullet that's very similar to yours in this episode.
Oh, that's a compliment. Thanks, babe. So why is Gordon, like, visiting Cabot Cove? Well, surprise, y'all, bitches.
You'll have to forgive Gordon. He's been just crazed with the new book, Patience Terhune, The Witch of Cabot Cove. It comes out tomorrow on the anniversary of her death. I mean, could you buy a better tie-in?
And who does Rick, and who does Bill Maher play? His media advisor. Rick Rivers is someone's media advisor.
My favorite moment in this encounter between Jessica and this author who's written about Patience Terhune is when Jessica Fletcher doesn't agree with people, she just pulls this great move where she just raises her eyebrows.
It's deep. Yes.
And that's
yes.
All she does. And I'm going to try that from now on. I don't have the same tactic when I disagree with people, but I'm going to try on Jessica Fletcher.
I was clocking that girl. It's like, oh, this is just like, this is a way. Well, I have a line from in it where she also shades him, but her shading is like so polite. And, like, civil, but, like, she always has the upper hand. Because she's better than everyone. Like,
absolutely.
J.B. Fletcher is a saint, okay?
Absolute saint.
Absolute saint. Okay, so, well, Gordon's there with Rick and Gordon's like, oh my gosh, like, why isn't there, like, more, like, stir around patients coming back from the dead? Like, I'm writing this book. Like, I need my media. Like, the anniversary is coming. Like, I gotta sell my books. So there's that. Okay, great. Next scene. Yes, we are doing scene by scene, y'all. A random woman shows up at night. And just as Jess is at Mildred's house with Adam. Okay, get this. Adam is played. Adam is Mildred's fiancé. Adam is played by Christopher Stone, who in real life is Dee Wallace's actual husband. And they were married for like 15 years and did multiple films together, including Cujo, but this is the only time that they're actually share a screen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's funny because I wrote down, I was like, she has really good sexual chemistry with this guy.
Because she literally was.
And I did not know that that was her husband.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
That's amazing.
He died of a heart attack in 95. Is that important?
Oh, so rest in peace.
They were with him up until together. So they're at their house, and they also comment on Adam's paint job of Mildred's house. And they're all getting ready for what, bitch? What are they getting ready for?
The casserole social.
Got. Oh, yum. And I want to go to the cake. You have no idea how many brooches I have and I do not wear. Like, I could make a brooch.
Just ready for the casserole social. Yes. Just ready for the fucking casserole social. Mm-hmm. So who comes to the door?
Who knocks at the door but that mysterious woman? And she's like, surprise, Mildred. I'm done. Ben, your sister. My name is Irene. Mommy was dying when she had me and gave me to her sister. And I'm pretty sure, if I didn't clock this right, but I'm pretty sure that sister just disappears with her to Michigan.
Yeah, she like their mom died. And so some aunt took Mildred's sister Irene to Michigan, where Jason and I are from. And they just haven't seen each other in a long time. And they're so happy. And Irene is played by an actress who is also plays Jenny in The Muppets Take Manhattan,
One of my favorite movies. That's the one actress I decided not to look up. How random. So I'm glad you got that funny. Bitch, babe.
Yeah, I was like, Jenny, what are you doing? So she shows up and... What does Uncle Seth say, Dr. Seth,
who is also there? He's like, y'all, that looks just like patience.
That's patience.
It looks just like the witch from the witch's shop.
The Pilgrim Witch. Good old Pilgrim Witch.
Patience Tahoon.
Patience Tahoon. So they're like having a really good time at the garden club. I cannot tell you all, like, I love to get in line and ladle food. Like, getting in line with multiple different options to ladle onto your plate is, like, always my fantasy. Jason the Clown, maybe making such a
Jason
mess.
Jason the Clown always makes two plates.
Two plates. Oh, that Jason the Clown has two plates again. Darn him. He can come back for seconds, but he has to let everyone else have some. and so they're all, like, gossiping and, like, doing whatever. And they're trying to figure out, like, did Irene, like, you know, how did she get here? And someone's like, oh, I saw her actually, like, arrive, like, today from, like, the train. Okay, whatever, spooky. Then that night, you know, Mildred's, like, trying to peacefully sleep in her freshly painted house. And she wakes up and she sees good old sister Irene, like, creepily sleepwalking around with some herbs in her hand. And she's like, oh, no, bitch. So what does she do? She does not take them to the sheriff's. She takes them to Jess's house.
And this one is Sanguinaria canadensis, also known as bloodroot. Jessica, all of these are mentioned over and over again in witchcraft literature. They're used for casting evil spells.
And Irene didn't remember any of this morning?
She was terribly upset when I told her. I didn't dare mention anything about this.
Mildred, you mustn't read too much into this. People have been known to sleepwalk for all sorts of reasons.
With a lighted candle and a bouquet of herbs used in satanic rites.
but Jess is like, I actually have to go. I have to go to the sheriff's, because of course she does. And then she, like, is in what? Like, the y'all just have to, like, look at the decor in all of these places, because it's so good. Including the sheriff's
office. It's amazing.
So the sheriff's already kind of, like, a little bit just, like, beside himself, because the paps and the town people are all like, where's Patience Tahoon? Like, what's going on? The witch is back. And he's trying to kind of keep people off, but he, like, t- tells Jesse, he's like, hey, listen, like, I looked into your concerns about all, like, Irene's travel, and it, like, checks out. Like, she flew from Tucson to Boston, which also, that's, pay attention to that. That's going to come back. And... and then the sheriff gets a call, right? And he's like, oh my gosh, something's crazy at the where?
Witch's Stump.
The Stump. Gotta get back to the Witch's Stump.
Get down to the Stump, Sheriff.
And to me, this is like a very crazy part. Like, I was really like gagged and thrown for this part, unexpectedly. It was they go there and there's this like psychotic preacher who's played by Wormtail from The Lord of the Rings. That's like the Giuliani to Trump. Remember, like, whispering into like the king's ear.
I forgot that's who that was.
Yeah, yes. He has a face for psychos. And he's, like, playing this, like, cray-cray preacher.
In the name of everything that's decent, I command thee, O Lucifer, O Beelzebub, and all ye spirits of Satan to flee forever before the forces of goodness and truth.
And he's like, I can't. Like, I cannot exercise this stump with all of these people here. And then he, like, points to Irene. He's like, especially with you here and all the spirits you're bringing. And Jess Fletch is like, no, girls first. And, like, takes Irene away from the mob. And Irene's like, oh, my gosh, I was going to get hanged again.
I know.
Not on my watch.
Irene has also picked up her new boyfriend, who is a snack called Jonas.
Yes, I looked that snack up, and he was just, like, he's been on, like, General Hospital for, like, 21,000 years. It's been his big
good year. For him.
Yeah, and he is a love snack. That. Okay. So now, so next scene. We are back at the hotel with Prissy Gordon, the author, the crappy author, yelling at Rick for not doing his job. And Rick's like, shh, I've figured it out. Like, don't you worry. Like, I've got
because he's mad because the Paps aren't being allowed into Cabot Cove because the sheriff has kept them away, even though there's such a stir about Patience Tahoon coming back to life.
Oh, shit. So I missed literally one line of all the lines we're going through. When Jess, two scenes back, was at the sheriff's office, she runs into Prissy Old Gordon and he apologizes for being such a rude cunt. And she goes,
here in Cabot Cove, it's quite permissible to be polite to nobodies.
I wrote that down, too. I love that line.
Isn't that such a hot line? We gotta add that in there, babe. And, okay, so then, you know, flash forward, we're in the hotel. Gordon's being pissy. Rick's like, I got a plan. Just you wait. And then we go back to Jess's house. And Jess, ring-ding-dings in the most brilliant brain of the world of hers. And it's like, wait a minute. How could good old Dr. Seth be called to Agnes Finningey's house when she was in Philly?
She gets that info from who? Her fucking Cabot Cove travel agent.
Yes, she does.
You're absolutely sure of the date? Thank you. Thank you very much. Oh, yes, it is nearly time for me to go to New York to see my publisher. I'll be calling you soon. Thank you. Good night, Phyllis.
That Phyllis Grant, the travel agency?
Yes.
I think that's who I want to play. I want to play Travel Agent Nick, who coordinates all of Jess's travel.
I think you would be amazing, honestly. Yes, I can totally see that.
Thank you.
And then Jess was like, wait, what she's thinking is, oh my goodness, I think someone called Seth on purpose so that he could see Pilgrim Witch at the Witch's Stump.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, that's very interesting. But then everyone's calling everyone. She gets another call. And they're like, something, the witch has been spotted again, running into this old barn. And by the time Jess gets there, it's like that, the like last scene in Beauty and the Beast where they're like trying to kill the beast. Everyone's there. And they're like,
it's a mob. Led by Harriet the Casserole Queen. Mm-hmm. It's like has a big old pitchfork and a
gossip girl
torch.
Gossip girl.
And she's just ready to kill everyone.
Look, there she goes.
And so they're like, what's in there? And then the cops come and they're like, whoa, back off. And they go inside the barn. And who is it but stinky old Bill Maher in a pilgrim outfit. And he's like, okay. And he lights the barn on fire and then sneaks out the back.
And that But we don't see that. We just, I mean, everyone else doesn't see that. Just the audience sees that. So we're like, Bill Maher is the witch?
Yeah, like,
but we had seen the witch, and the witch looked like Jenny from Up at Stake Manhattan. So what the fuck?
Jenny from the block, and like, now he's like slipping out, and like, what's happening? Okay, and so that, well, that was exhaustive. Now Nick is taking over the next part of My Favorite Murder, She Wrote. Go, girl!
Okay, so then it's the next day, and the barn has come down, and it's been burnt down. And, of course, the cops are there. And what do the cops in Cabot Cove do? First thing, when there's a crime scene, Jessica Fletcher needs to be on the ground immediately because she's a mystery writer, and we need her help. And that's the way we do things. And so she is, like, looking around, and she's like, wait, did you all check the fucking...
Did you look in the root cellar?
And they're like, wait, what storm cellar? And she's like...
Well, there should be a trap door in the floor someplace.
And they, like, see it.
Ah, yeah. Oh, here it is, under this pile of debris.
And they open it up, and who is in there?
It's Irene.
Jenny from Up at Stake Manhattan, also known as Irene, also known as Patience Tahune.
And all I have to say to that is, come on, Irene.
Irene. So Irene is dead, and they're like, all of a sudden, this is a murder. Mm-hmm. It's a murder plot. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what the fuck? And the other thing I want to point out, like, why is Jessica always able to do all this shit, right? Why is she always, like, led around?
Bike.
A, she has a bike. She doesn't know how to drive a car.
Oh, do you know
which
that?
Is iconic.
Do you know that they never show her driving?
That's like she doesn't know how to drive.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah,
environmentalist.
She's an environmentalist queen diva, but also because older women are invisible to society, and everyone always underestimates her. And that's my favorite thing about this show.
Mm, yeah,
it's like we always underestimate older women. And it's such a theme in the show, and it's also something that was such a theme in Angela's career. Like, Angela Lansbury, for so many years in Hollywood, was just seen as, like, this woman who played older women. Even though she was, like, in her 20s, she would get cast in things like Gaslight and things like The Manchurian Candidate and... Picture of Dorian Gray, where she played mothers. She played these matronly characters, and she was nominated for Oscars for all of those performances, but she played these super matronly characters, and it frustrated her for a really, really long time. Just a little background for everyone here, just a wee side note from Murder, She Wrote. Angela Lansbury was born in England, and she moved to New York after her father died from stomach cancer when she was 9. Her mom was an actress. They moved during the Blitz. She studied acting in New York, but then her mom moved her out to L.A., to Laurel Canyon, when she was a teenager so that her mom could follow, you know, get more work in the movies. And in L.A., when Angela was in her, like, late teens and early 20s, she really fell into kind of the gay scene in L.A. She had a group of gay male friends who would take her around to the underground gay scene in L.A. in the 1940s. Yeah, wow. This is all says Wikipedia. But I really want to, like, read her biography based on this stuff. So she had all these gay friends, and she would always go to these gay clubs. And that's where she met the playwright John Van Bruten, who wrote Gaslight, which she starred in.
Wow.
And that got her signed with MGM. And then she made National Velvet, which made her best friends with Liz Taylor. And they were always really good friends. And then she married a gay movie director. And she thought that by marrying him, she could fix him. They thought that they both kind of thought that. And that didn't really work out. And they divorced. And but they still stay friends. And then she married her husband, Peter Mullen Shaw, who was an ex of Joan Crawford's. And they started dating. They got married. They lived in Malibu. And they kept giving her, like I was saying before, these kind of shitty parts. Not shitty parts. They were good parts, but they were matronly parts, like 20 years older than her. Like in Manchurian Candidate, she's playing the mother of someone who is like 4 years older
Frank
than
Sinatra.
She was. Yeah, Frank Sinatra. Yeah, duh. So she gets frustrated and she moves back to New York City to do a little musical called Mame in 1966. And it was a huge, huge fucking hit. And she won the Tony for it, and she became like the toast of everything. And that's really what started her on the road to being this massive gay icon. And then, but then again, she's underestimated. They don't let her do the Mame movie. They give it to Lucy, which was a huge hit, like a huge blow to her. And then she was offered One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
But it turned out to be a huge mistake, because that movie was a big stinking bomb. specifically because Lucy couldn't sing. And so it really backfired, but
it really did. And then she turned on One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest to play Nurse Ratched.
I did not know that.
Yep. She was like, this is too much all of my stuff that I've already done, though. The mean ball-busting bitch. She was like, I don't want to do that. So she does Bedknobs and Broomsticks instead, which was a huge hit for her.
And one of your faves.
And, yeah, one of my favorite movies of all time, Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Watch it if you don't. I don't think it streams anywhere. I own it. We'll do that one time. We'll do that next Halloween. And then, you know, she has some trouble in her family. Like, her Malibu home got caught on fire. Her son had a heroin problem. So she moved her whole family to Ireland. And so she's just going to live between Ireland and New York City. She was like, I can't do Hollywood anymore. And then she gets Gypsy, which starts on the West End. She moves it over to Broadway. It's a huge hit. She wins another Tony Award. And she made a movie with Bette Davis called Death on the Nile, which I really think we need to watch and do a mini episode on. And then she does Sweeney Todd, wins another Tony for that. Then she does a revival of MAME, which is a flop. And then she started doing these Mrs. Marple detective movies, which turned into Murder, She Wrote, which brings us back to Cabot Cove. But all of that to say, Angela Lansbury brought this kind of experience of being underestimated and undervalued to her work as Jessica Fletcher. And Jessica Fletcher's superpower is being underestimated and undervalued, which I love.
And this show is going to be, you know, no one really, I mean, I'm not kidding. As we said in the beginning, like, in the later seasons, it did move. But when this was on Sundays, it was the number one show. Like, it was a runaway hit. Like, CBS had no idea what they had on their hands. And so, like, that, they, you know, they just thought maybe this would just get some kind of viewing, some family viewing, some, you know, an older demographic. But it was a huge, huge success. I mean, 12 seasons is so long.
And also how this ended. It ended, too, when Les Moonves took over CBS. And the famous quote, when he canceled this and the sequel to Golden Girls, The Golden Palace, he was like, CBS is no longer old lady TV. And so fuck Les Moonves, fuck Matt Lauer, tying back to what we were saying before.
Fuck Bill Maher.
Fuck all you fucking misogynistic people who run TV shows. Anyway. Jessica finds the body of Irene, who is also Patience Tahoon, who is also everybody, who's also Jenny from Muppets Take Manhattan. She's dead. And they're like, how did she die? What happened? What happened? What happened? What happened? They get the toxicology report. It says she died between 1 and 3 p.m., which...
If she died between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m., it couldn't have been Irene who was pursued into the barn last night because she was already dead.
So how did she get there before? Well, I'm kind of going to go through this. She was, like, meeting with her boyfriend Jonas, and Jonas was like, she was jet-lagged, so she had to go home and take a nap.
Because
so
Jonas says that, home. Right? Jonas, like, she was tired.
Jonas says that to Jessica, yeah, and Jessica's like...
You don't get jet-lagged traveling from west to east, as in Phoenix to Boston to Portland. Look, when everyone at the eastern end of the trip are nodding off, you're still wide awake.
Which I'm like, I don't know if that's true, Jessica, but I know you don't get jet lag going from Arizona to Boston. That's crazy. So they're like, she must have gone home to talk to someone on the phone and then gone to the barn to meet them where she was killed before it got set on fire. Mm-hmm. So Jessica's
scandalous.
Like, what the fuck? So then they go and they talk to Dee Wallace, who is like, has an amazing scene where she's like all emotional about her sister dying and all this shit.
Well, she was going to give, she was like,
I told her that since the house had been in the family all these years, I was having it placed under both our names. She was so moved, she cried.
House. Y'all are too trusting in Cabot Cove. Mm-mm.
I know, because it turns out what? Oh, snap, that's not even her sister.
I know, surprise!
Someone shows up and they're like, hey, I'm from the bank. That wasn't the sister. The sister died in a typhoid outbreak in Michigan like 20 years ago, which you're like, what?
How? what? About that classic typhoid outbreak in the 70s that just it's disseminated.
So confusing.
Yeah.
It's so confusing. But then you basically, then you're like, oh, so Bill Maher must have tried to kill her because she set her up as this actress to pretend to be Patience Dehune, right?
Yeah, because he wants to drum
to get
up the
publicity for the book.
Media, which is, you know, Patience Dehune, the witch of Cabot Cove.
Exactly. And so they're trying to get Bill Maher on it. And then Jessica shows up and she's like, I got you, Bill Maher. You bought the barn and you burnt it down yourself, which I didn't really understand. But Bill Maher is like, yeah, but I only did that for publicity, not to kill anybody. And it's true because she had been killed, you know, hours earlier. So they're like, who did she call on the phone? Bill Maher's like, I called her on the phone to talk about the plot, but she didn't want to do it anymore because she was in love with Jonas now or something. I don't know why Irene got cold feet on this. Come on, Irene. But
come
anyway,
on, Irene.
Jessica's like, I've got a plan. So then we have the iconic scene where Jessica sets a trap.
Yes.
Which is always my favorite part of any murder show.
Like a
episode.
Subtle trap, like she says something in front of people, right? Just like a little, just like a little nugget, just a little nugget.
She has some folks over for dinner and some pie, and she's like,
But the sheriff now believes that the murder took place somewhere other than in the Greeley barn.
And then he took the body there?
Well, Sheriff Metzger is convinced that when he goes over the barn again tomorrow morning, he'll find something that will link Mr. Fairchild to the murder. Some tiny shred of proof that Mr. Fairchild might have overlooked.
And she, like, drops a little clue, like the police should be doing. And then they, of course, sneak to the barn to see who shows up at night. That's right. It's Adam, Dee Wallace's husband, in real life and in fake life. And he is there trying to get rid of the evidence of his paint job from the house. Because why?
Why?
He killed Irene.
He killed Irene. And the paint that she saw matched the paint where? In Mildred's house that he was doing.
That's right. So he came home, heard her on the phone with Bill Maher, got so angry that she was going to try to steal the money or something?
No,
that
I
he killed her.
He was in on it. No, he was in on it.
No, I don't think he was in on it. I think he was mad because they were going to steal the money, that Irene was going to try to, like, take the money and try to be her sister.
I let myself in. I found Irene by the hall table. She was sorting out the day's mail. Hi, Irene.
You startled me.
Oh, I just came to get my tools.
Anyway, he was pissed off and killed her and hit her in the paint. And then fucking hid her body in a barn. And Jessica fucking knew it. She's also, let me tell you another thing I think about Jessica Fletcher. She is not afraid. She, like, will walk into rooms with murderers by herself, explain to them why they murdered somebody, and she is not afraid. And you know who that? She's not afraid of witches.
Mm-mm.
She's not afraid of loud authors. She's not afraid of fundamentalist preachers. She's not afraid of murderers. And you know who that reminds me of?
Yeah.
Her being not afraid? Elizabeth Warren.
You stinky, 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 stinky skunk.
Because she's not afraid.
Yes. Yeah. I do see it. Yeah, we should make some kind of crazy meta, like Elizabeth Warren is the J.B. Fletcher of our times.
She is the J.B. Fletcher of our times.
Well, you see, okay, so here's the other thing is that here's like the other twist in all of this is that the reason why Adam killed Irene, who actually is, Irene was hired by all of them because she was an out-of-work actress in New York, of course.
Yes, I'm with you, Irene.
Whose name was Annie Gorman, which is, so none of this is important at all. None of this is important. But Adam had to kill Irene slash Annie because when he overheard her, like, talking about all the stuff that was going down, he had to kill her because what? He wanted that inheritance.
That's right.
That's right.
I still don't know how she would have threatened the inheritance if he knew that she was a fraud and why he had to kill her, though.
Yes. We're going to have to put JB on that. We're going to have to put JB Fletcher on that because I'm not wise enough to answer that.
But that also goes back to the favorite fan theory that Jessica actually killed them all.
Yes, yes. There is.
And that her case against Adam is pretty weak. Mm-hmm. And Jessica actually killed them because She is an ancestor of Patience Tehoun.
Yes, Jessica's a witch. Jessica's witch, Jessica's Elizabeth Warren, everything.
Jessica is Elizabeth Warren. Because the other thing, they have the same superpower, which is common sense. They just know how to break everything down and make it all sound like common sense.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, okay, so girl, fabulous. Anything else you want to add on our very first murder, or my favorite murder she wrote?
Just another thing on my Justice for Angela Lansbury kick. Angela Lansbury was nominated for an Emmy every year for Best Lead Actress in a Drama. She never won, and she lost every year. She lost to Sharon Gless twice, Tyne Daly twice, Patricia Wedding twice, Dana Delaney twice,
criminal.
Kathy Baker three times.
For Picket Fences? And once,
yeah, for fucking Picket Fences. And once to Cela Ward.
Whoa. Yeah, that's... It's actually... That's famous. That's, like, iconic and famous. I think that's the most nominations with no win. For
yes.
a single person.
For a primetime Emmy Award, absolutely.
But, yeah.
But we love her, and I'm sending Angela Lansbury supernatural protection and
she's still with us.
Love. Yes, she is.
And there's, I want to send you all to this, like, really beautiful thing. I don't know if, I'm sure most people are familiar with the reggae song, Murder, She Wrote. Murder, She Wrote. Angela Lansbury, was just introduced to that in an interview. And she has this, like, a really beautiful response that you all should go and look at and see, because it's really fabulous. And that just came out, like, a week ago. So, yeah, yay to Angela Lansbury still making the news and still being charming and on top of it as ever.
Yeah, and yay to Murder, She Wrote for being that beautiful bond between us and our moms and our grandmas and our aunts and our babysitters, that just kind of perfect family spooky show to watch together.
And if you have, like, an ep that you want us to cover, please, because, like, this at least really excites Nick and I, so we're for sure gonna, like, every couple of months, like, do our favorite Murder, She Wrote. So yeah, there's like a real special one in your hearts, like, let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. Send us your favorite Murder, She Wrote episodes. Send us your stories of you and your divas. Send us reviews. Send us money. Send us Venmo us stuff.
Yep. Anything.
Send
us CDs. Send us DVDs.
Send us Halloween decorations.
Send us Aeropostale t-shirts.
Yes. Send us Jessica Fletcher style overcoats.
Oh my gosh.
Please. Sweater. I'm obsessed with those overcoats.
She was wearing this schmock, this, like, I've actually had a couple schmocks like that, but it was, like, her typewriting schmock that she was, like, wearing under her button down that I thought was so chic. It was, like, a mock collar. Like, couldn't get enough of that.
Close.
Okay, Battle Angels.
Yeah, and send us your love and send us your spooky pictures of you getting ready for Halloween.
Yes, stay tuned. We got, I'm sure you all can guess. So we're doing, we're going to have a Spindle, like we said, Brandon's partner, coming up next week. And then, come on now, we're going to be doing a Halloween.
We have one penultimate Halloween episode for you coming up. What do you think it is?
What do you think it is? Come on now. What do you think it is? It's, you're going to have to guess too far, okay, if you've been listening to this. You don't have to guess too far. It's going to be iconic. We love you.
We love you. Bye.
credit card rewards, greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.